Welcome to Packet Pushers, a data networking podcast where real engineers get together to talk nerdy. Today, we are convened yet again at the HP Discover Conference in Barcelona. Hola.
Hola.
Hola. And it's kind of cool, isn't it, to say it like that?
Yeah.
It is.
Well, it's interesting. So I asked before I came over here, since I'm a total noob to Europe,
yep.
How much English is spoken over there? Oh, you won't have any problem. Everybody speaks English. Not in Barcelona, Spain. They do not. So my favorite, I've been asking, you know, cab drivers and so on, ¿habla inglés? No, a little. A little. That's the thing I've been getting. Well, so it's been pretty rough. I've just taken to showing them on my iPhone an address where I want to go, and then they take me there.
Well, the thing is, we're not up near the tourist traps. If we're up near the tourist center, you'd be fine. Everybody speaks English up there. We're a little bit further out where we're staying. But English is kind of like an open standard, so everybody knows a little bit of English.
Yeah.
Or a little bit of open.
What a segue.
You like that?
Oh, that was great.
You like that?
It's awesome.
So today's show is, we want to talk about open. And there are many companies who talk about open standards and open methodologies and contributing open source code. But the reality is there's quite a gap between intention, execution, and delivery. And that's, we're sort of talking about what are the degrees of open and how we can look at the difference between open ecosystems, open standards, and open source. So Mr. Banks is obviously here, so I won't introduce him yet again, but I would like to welcome Sawar Raza to the show. Tell people a little bit about yourself.
Hi, guys. Glad to be back. And I'm Sawar Raza. I work at HP Networking. And recently, I've been leading up a lot of our open source efforts. So I happen to chair a work group at the Open Network Foundation, focused on northbound interfaces. So we're attempting to standardize SDN northbound.
Yep.
As well as, you know, I have the privilege of holding HP's board seat on Open Daylight.
Right. On the ODL Foundation?
Yeah. And so I've been having a lot of fun with that, and been talking to a lot of customers and partners, you know, fellow vendors as we interact in the open source community, and the open standards committee. So,
right.
And
you're right in the middle of open and open source. You're right in the heart of it, dealing
pretty
with
much.
The discussions and
pretty
so
much.
On. Yeah.
Yep. Pretty much.
Now we've recorded another podcast while we're here talking about HP Helion. Sorry, it's becoming
Helion.
A joke. Yeah, Helion.
Now you've got us all doing it.
Yeah. Right? And we talked a lot about open contributions in the context of OpenStack, but we're going to open the discussion out a little more to talk about wider contributions to the ecosystem, right? Mm-hmm. Now, are you engaged with the IETF as well, or is that...?
No, there are people on my team who work right. In IETF, but not me personally.
Yeah, that's right. So I just wanted to make sure that we'd covered all of the openness that exists in the ecosystem. So... as we put together the content around the show, we sort of came to the thing, you know, is open a buzzword or is it actually something that's the thing? We talk a lot about open networking, and I mean, networking's had a 20-year, you know, love affair with open standards around things like OSPF and BGP and RIP, Ethernet, IP, TCP/IP, HTTP, DNS, all those protocols are open. And there's the value of those protocols is not because I, Greg Farrow, own them or any other company or any other entity owns them. It's that everybody can equally use them to their own benefit. And those protocols, because they're all known, because they're all free of copyright, free of burden, nobody owns them, nobody controls them, and even what control exists is in bodies like the IEEE and the IETF, then everybody was able to consume them without penalty or fear or fee. So the future of this is really sort of around how open networking can progress, because as SDN comes on, we're seeing less and less real openness. We're seeing a lot of balkanization as the SDN standard. So
we're seeing a lot of vendors stick the word open in front of their products as if to say, this is open, this is a standard, this is a thing, everybody can use it, when in fact it is meant to attract attention and kind of convince you of a particular, this is open like you've always thought of open, when really there's a lot of nuance going on there.
We've talked about this with APIs, right? An API is inherently usable. The purpose of an API is to be used. That doesn't make it open. That just means that the API is available for anybody to write a piece of code and poll the API.
That's right.
An open API is one where the API is actually agreed and developed by a number of interested parties so that everybody can say, this API meets my needs and it was developed in public. You know, those sorts of things. But just saying that your API is open because it's available for anybody to use is not the definition of open I subscribe to.
So... Sawar, let's get you going on this. I mean, you had a lot of points that you wanted to make about what's really going on in the industry is open.
Well, so, you know, I'll go back to Greg's first point. I think, you know, there's a lot of open washing going on, for sure, right? Just as there's a lot of...
Oh, boy. Yeah. Just cloud washing a while ago.
Just as there's a lot of SDN washing and cloud washing going on, right? It means different things to different people, right? And, you know, I think as technologists, I think most of us probably tend to agree, you know, within, you know, very small margin of error, what we mean when we're talking about an open API or an open system or an open ecosystem or open standards. Mm. You know, you get some of our marketing people involved and, you know, sometimes words... What's that quote from Princess Bride? You keep using that word.
I do not think it means.
I do not think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable.
Yeah. So back to point here. You know, there's certainly a little bit of an epidemic right now of folks, you know, claiming openness when really, you know, they're really driving at the sort of the same old behavior of, you know, vertically integrated stack, you know, not really interoperable across the different layers of the architecture, and, you know, just putting stuff out there, you know, just, for example, publishing a technical spec.
Yep.
And, you know, doing it in a forum like ITF, for example.
Yeah.
Right? Where you have the capability to label something as informational. I mean, literally, FYI, we're doing this. Yeah. Here's, you know,
you're
here
almost
it is.
Treating the IETF as a wiki.
Exactly. Right?
When you publish an informational draft, you know, I sometimes wonder if I could get an RFC up saying that, you know, I'm going to the toilet type thing, publish it just as a joke. Because really, some of those are like that.
You know? Probably depends on whether you're friends with the area chair.
Right.
But
it's a land rush, though, isn't it? I mean, you're seeing everyone in the SDN space trying to get their spec or their pet project to be adopted by everyone else in the industry. That's good for them if that happens. And so one way to do that is to try to make whatever it is your product is, your protocol, your pet thing, it's open. That's one way to try to grab some of that land and grab some territory.
So it's open. And you know... there are plenty of technologies where that's worked, right? I mean, there are, you know, things that came out of companies that, you know, literally were de facto standards because everyone rallied around them.
Yes.
Right? They were published as informational and then they got enough support and enough input.
Yep.
And the original authors were willing to work with the community. To draw some consensus. Exactly, right?
I mean, are you saying that can't work today or just it isn't happening that way anymore?
It doesn't necessarily always happen, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, there's examples. I mean, take a look at something like OpFlex, right?
Yeah.
And I'm no critique of the technology at all, no critique of the protocol.
No, I can do that.
But really, just it's an FYI. Hey, we did this. We're using it.
Yeah.
Here it is, right?
But, you know, Cisco has been fairly common in my view. I read most of the IETF RFCs, at least I read the header about them. Mm-hmm. A lot of them are like the latest little batch of MPLS, PE, OEM, blah, 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 with using multicast when the sun shines in the west-hand side of the sky and Mars is active in the universal quadrant. You know, that sort of stuff. It's like pointless. I mean, there's a lot of pointless RFCs coming out of the IETF lately, but... Cisco has been one company who's particularly been using the IETF as a wiki entry. They put HSRP, they've put VXLAN is in there, but it's not a standard. It's still informational. It doesn't look like it'll ever go through to being a standard. And OpFlex is another one. And OpFlex is just an informational draft.
Yeah.
It's not a standard.
Right.
And I think I wrote an article a while back, and I'll try and link it in the show notes, that out of the 7,200 RFCs, less than 300 of them are actually standards. Like the IETF itself as a body doesn't actually do a very good job of actually taking something as a standard. Once enough people stand up and salute, as IBM would say, they call it a standard and move on. They stop bothering to complete the process, which is...
Don't understate that one point there about just because it's got an RFC number on it doesn't mean it's a standard,
right?
Which I think is, you know, common misconception.
Yeah. Yeah. RFC stands for Request for Comment. Mm-hmm. Now, other bodies, like you said, there's others. IEEE, we won't talk about them because that's just a horror show. But the two we want to talk about is Open Daylight and Open Networking Foundation, mm-hmm. where they Open Networking Foundation is the custodian of the Open Flow standard, mm-hmm. and that is very consensus driven.
It is, and you know the ONF has taken sort of a different path in terms of SDOs, right? Yeah. So
SDOs is standard development organizations.
Yeah. Yeah. I think their initial focus was on developing the standard, and I think for quite a while after that, they spent most of their efforts on sort of evangelizing and building a market for the standard, which is all very, very valuable.
Mm. Just to park there for a second, I mean, the ONF had some criticism early on because it was membership-driven. Mm-hmm. In other words, it was open to a point as long as you were a member that was actively engaged, as opposed to being open to the wider community.
And that is still the case.
Yeah.
That is still the case. I think where things are changing is that, in a recently announced reorg, they're starting to change focus away from being sort of standards and document driven to being code driven, and I think that's a reflection of the fact that in a lot of arenas, especially in SDN, now code is often seen as the way that vendors bring influence to the table.
Yeah.
It's seen as it's seen by customers as real testament to we're doing work here.
Yeah. And there's that famous IETF quote from years ago which says we reject kings and queens and committees and respect running code. I can't remember the exact lines of the quote, but it's like the IETF was originally founded on the idea of the person who can bring proof of concept running code to the table showing not only a protocol but an actual running implementation, mm-hmm. and working. That's what we should be ratifying.
Right.
We shouldn't be bringing theoretical standards to the table without running code for them.
And I think, I actually think, in areas where there is a lot of mutual interest and, vendors cooperating, bodies like ITF, bodies like ONF do a pretty good job, mm. right? There's good governance. There's a process, which, when you follow through with it, it really does deliver solid standards. I think where there is this this mismatch is in the length of time it takes to work through the process, whereby to stand up a small army of developers and actually prove something out in code, mm. takes a lot less time and arguably a lot less effort than having to go 20 rounds with six of your competitors, right?
Yep.
In pretty exotic locales. I mean, they pick some great locations for their meetings. I haven't been to one yet, right?
That's to tempt you to come.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it's for centrality. I picked on Russ about this when we recorded with the IETF, and it's all about centrality.
Yeah.
And apparently Hawaii is one of those locations that all the people from Asia could get to reasonably
and not have
to come to North America.
Yeah.
Okay.
Still.
Come on.
Hawaii, really?
I don't know. I've never been.
So,
it's nice.
I'd go to Bali, though.
But
I can critique Bali versus Hawaii, but let's do that on a different show.
This problem of developing code versus developing a standard, it seems like the cart before the horse, but at the same time, it's I can get results this way, mm-hmm. go and write code that does something for me that I needed to do, as opposed to going 20 rounds with six of your competitors to finally agree on some kind of a standard.
Part of what's broken here is that the point about competition is that every vendor is duplicating the same effort, mm. right? And if we could get that, instead of having six competitors doing six of the same thing with 5% differentiation between them, because fundamentally customers are not going to buy six different things. They want to see six of the same thing, maybe with some enhancements, and each vendor can add some magic sauce to the top. If we could get the six vendors to stack together and make a 600% solution, instead of all six are the same thing and giving me one of something. Mm-hmm. I don't want competition, I want cooperation.
Right.
And that's really the foundation of open.
Right. And I think the standards process, when it works, it facilitates that well, mm-hmm. right? open source, by the way, has, you know, the same sorts of challenges. And yep. I think one of the key questions we have to ask ourselves is, you know, is open source the new de facto standard, right? Are open source bodies making standards bodies irrelevant or issuing to them some kind of wake-up call, right, that says, hey, you know, this process has to move faster and
yeah.
maybe there's a way to tie in the code-producing like body with the document-producing body and get the work done.
I think it's more
together.
Like a tide going in, tide going out thing, mm-hmm. right? On one hand, when there's an industry transition going on and there's a revolution happening in the technology, you actually don't want standards bodies. You want to let the innovation run free so that eventually we converge on something, and then you want that standardized, right? So in the sense that, on the other hand, when the industry is stable, you're actually only implementing, and that's where we've been, say, from 2000 to 2012, mm-hmm. completely stable. You know, the most exciting thing that happened in the last 10, you know, in that decade was BGP got multi-protocol or something, you know, like, or OSPF got some totally stubby areas, or, you know, we're talking minor iterations to the protocol. Whereas SDN throws all of this out and sort of goes back to the clean slate that we had in 1995. And so I think the standard bodies need to flex. Mm-hmm. Now's the time to bring off the brakes, throw out all the current procedures, go into a fast, you know, a rapid ramp while we sit there and say, code, we need to go back to where the ITF was, which was we reject kings and queens.
Yep.
You know, in other words, taking a jab at the ITU and saying, we don't want you to have endless meetings talking about this. If I bring running code to the table, that's what I'm going to run. That's where the ITF came in, right? And we need that rapid adoption. I want more SDN, but I can't go and buy SDN. My customers, I can't say to my customers, go and buy this SDN or that, because they don't interoperate.
You're suggesting a governance or a process problem is really what you're going after here. You're saying...
Is it governance, process, or culture? Because, you know, a lot of these standards bodies, you know, grew up in a different time. I certainly believe that they still impart a lot of great value, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of great thinking, a lot of great technology that comes out of there.
Yeah, bathwater, all that sort of stuff. We don't want to throw, you know.
Yeah, but, you know, I agree with you, right? I mean, we're seeing, you know, an immense amount of interest in things like, you know, service function chaining, right? How many drafts, right? How many buffs, and how many, right? And that's great.
Yeah.
It's all great, but at some point, what will probably trump it is someone who has been sort of working alone in a corner, right, with a small team and says, hey, this is what I got to work. Here are the problems I ran into. And I'm making it available as part of...
And I'm open for comments and willing to change if you can come and have a discussion with me.
And, you know, we've gone from, you know, providing sample code to now sort of, you know, this race to provide the canonical reference implementation, right?
Right.
Whether it's, you know, I want to be, you know, the de facto policy framework, or I want to be the de facto southbound protocol, right? Or everything else in the middle, right?
So just to clarify on that, mm-hmm. the Open Daylight Controller has a modular southbound and northbound, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And the idea would be is that the southbound APIs out could be HP uses them to talk directly to their kit, Breakade has them for theirs. Some people might want to replace it with an OpFlex module like what Cisco's produced for their proprietary policy protocol that they're trying to make open.
Mm-hmm.
But the process is, you know, we'll talk more about that in a minute, why OpFlex is open, it's openly published, but it's not open standard because nobody else contributed to it.
Yeah.
And nobody else is likely to, quite honestly.
Consensus, you know. Right.
Yeah, it's no consensus behind it. It's Cisco brought the tablet down from the mountain and said, here's our open commandments. Yeah. did I break a rule there?
No. Number 13.
I mind it. Have you ever seen that movie, The History of the World, Part 1, where Mel Brooks is dressed up as Moses, goes off to the mountain, he goes, and God goes, I shall give you commandments to lead my people to the promised land. And he comes down with 15 commandments, and he drops a tablet, and he goes, I give you these 10 commandments. It's one of the funniest scenes. The Viking scene was pretty... Anyway, neither here. So... You know, the point is that there's many definitions of open in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I, coming back to the open washing thing is, mm-hmm. you know, the Open Networking Foundation was truly open in that everybody was participating. It was consensus-driven, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the open flow spec that everybody's already gotten around. Mm-hmm. How can we grow it? You know, AT&T, Deutsche Telekom, mm-hmm. you know, everybody got in a room and agreed on it. And then all the vendors came along and said, we can't implement OpenFlow in our silicon, and kind of killed it, is the way I saw it, right? It sort of slowed it down because everybody said, oh, you can have OpenFlow 1.3.
OVS became the sexy place to do OpenFlow.
Yeah,
I don't necessarily see it that way. I actually think that the protocol itself has evolved a lot since that time, right? And the newer versions of the protocol are definitely more in line with what is implementable,
and it took
right?
Two or three, I mean, I had a lot of vendors sitting here telling me OpenFlow will never fly because it can't be implemented in silicon ever. Yeah. And I'm going, dude, let it take 2 or 3 years and you'll be implementing it in your...
Well, it's done. I mean, even the merchant silicon vendors now have, you know, OFDPA, right? You have the... Sort of, you know, their open flow.
Didn't take long.
Right? Yeah,
I just still remember. Remember those discussions we used to have with vendors off the record? None of them would go on the record.
They
said OpenFlow will never work because it doesn't scale and it can't be implemented in silicon. I'm going, what?
OpenFlow is a great example of, you know, if we look at the SDN landscape, right? What SDN really promised was openness at every layer of the stack. Right, get away from the black box mentality that has pervaded networking, and say, okay, you want to use an open protocol to configure flow entries, and let's have an open interoperable way to be able to address the controller and to be able to write apps, right? And that vision has not been realized yet entirely, right? Lots of people are working on it, right? But you know where some of the open washing comes in is where you have you have vendors that have, sort of a carbon copy of, existing strategy, except, baking a few new features, but it's still yet another vertically integrated stack with some open APIs.
APIs are never open. They're just available for use.
Yeah.
Making the distinction between, open at every level, you were saying, versus a vertically integrated stack. Which is not every level. That's you put an interface on the outside of the vertically integrated stack. That's not open versus the every level piece.
Yep.
So get into that with the every level.
Well, so at the southbound you have OpenFlow as a as an example of a great protocol to be able to configure flow entries
to put state into a virtual switch or a physical switch or whatever. Yeah.
Right. At the controller layer. It would be great to have some consensus around what a northbound interface looks like, right? So that application writers can expect some level of portability, right, across controller
without having to develop for every platform in the world, right?
Yeah, I mean, they don't necessarily have to be binary compatible, but at least let's have the same sets of primitives and the same.
So if you're somebody like if you're a load balancer vendor, today you have to develop once for Cisco's ACI, once for VMware's NSX, and once for Open Daylight.
Yeah,
right. Well, that's silly.
Yeah,
that's not competition. That's just duplication of effort.
Exactly.
Right. Nobody. That's just wasted money.
Yeah. Right? And so it makes a lot of sense to have. To have those open interfaces, and really, I think the value is in making sure. I mean, you'll never get 100% agreement, but there's value in making sure people come to the table and express their opinions, and let's go and see what we can implement together.
Yeah.
Versus, here's what I baked in a lab, right? And I think this is, the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah.
And thou shalt eat it. It may be morally.
Yeah.
But thou shalt
I'm
eat
so
it.
And so from Big Co. I've developed this, therefore everybody should do it.
So
there's a certain amount of that going on in Open Daylight for sure,
This attempt to push it used to be you developed a protocol, you baked it into, your product, you tried to get it standardized in ITF, but whether or not that went anywhere was completely important, but now it's let me just push out lots and lots of code, right? And because I've pushed out code, that automatically I get the checkbox for being open.
Open, yep.
I don't think so.
No.
Right? I think you're open when you're open to suggestion and you're open to change and you're open to adapting. right?
Yeah.
As opposed to saying...
And you're willing to say, okay, here's my open source code, come and give me some feedback, mm-hmm. and then we can get together to add that to the code or remove something from the open thing that I just produced.
Sure.
I mean, so Dave Ward from Cisco recently put out a blog post on Cisco's website and then spoke about this at the IETF. And I think my reading of it, that he was having great frustration in the standards bodies around the number of similar standards being developed on the same thing. So he specifically spoke about NetConf models or Yang models for configuration database, right? And all the vendors have to configure the same thing. If you define a VLAN, you know, maybe they're all the same. But what they're having at the moment in the IETF is, you know, a number of different, you know, Yang models for defining a VLAN because each vendor wants to produce their own. And it's like, why not just pick one and live with it, right? Yeah, is that the sort of argument we're seeing?
Well, so I think Dave makes a good argument, right? There is definitely a proliferation of similar, not identical, sorts of efforts, right, in multiple spheres. And you know, I would echo the concern around how long it takes to actually work through the process. You know, the consensus building process.
Now, why is that? Is that in your mind just because the IETF, since we're talking about them, only meets every so often, every 6 months, I think?
No, because most of the work is actually done on the mailing lists, right? The meetings themselves are a great place to, you know, to sort of seal the deal, but a lot of the work's done in advance. So I wouldn't say it's a frequency issue. But
we're back to governance, process, and culture.
A little bit, yeah. There's also, obviously, there's politics involved, right? And not to say that code-producing bodies are devoid of politics, ugly politics, but I think there's a need to try and bridge the velocity with which open source can proceed and the sort of the much more tepid pace of the standards process, because standards are important, right? I mean, you're bringing order to chaos by writing stuff down, formalizing it,
yeah,
right, getting people to agree on it. I mean, code in a repo, not exactly readable by everyone, right? not exactly accessible to everyone.
A standard is a foundation that you can count on.
Yeah.
This is a baseline of functionality that I know if I conform to this specification, it's going to be interoperable with other people doing the same thing.
But you also need to know that the standard can be produced in code.
Yep.
There are a number of standards in the IETF that can't be created. Like the OpenFlow thing was... A lot of the vendors, ultimately this thing about the vendors was, we now have a standard we can't use, right? And they wanted to whine about that and say, you know, this, the idea of chaining actions inside of OpenFlow caused problems because of the silicon pipeline in the chip.
Right.
Can't recirculate a packet through the packet pipeline.
Forwarding abstractions, working group is formed, try to build the bridge and figure that all out.
Yeah. Right. Yep. So now all of a sudden you've got code for a standard, you've got a standard that can't be implemented. And of course, in this case, there's a crack here. It can be implemented in software plenty fine in a virtual switch. Can't be implemented in software in a hardware switch. So that was the gap, right? So you need to make sure that your standards, anybody can go and create a standard, but you need to show that running code, that the standard is practical in use, doesn't burn enormous amounts of CPU, doesn't require...
Which, starting with running code, would seem to produce that result.
Well, it's a stall, right?
But you know, I think you have to be very careful not to tilt too far in the other direction, right? Because there are people who will say, you know, and I don't agree with them, that, you know, the standards bodies as they exist are irrelevant, right? Something I keep hearing thrown around is, you know, code is coin of the realm, right? And
that's an ODL saying.
And you know,
it's code of the realm today.
Yeah, and
it won't be tomorrow.
You know, I can see the sentiment where that originates from, but at the end of the day, I think injecting some formalism, right, into the process is important, right?
Yeah, but just since we're picking on ODL for a moment with that example of code as the coin of the realm, they have governance, they have a technical steering committee, they have, you know, people that are, I mean, so it's not like it's unstructured.
Oh, no, and I don't mean to pick on them at all. I actually think it's a fantastic community that operates, you know, as a true meritocracy, right? But it is... not immune to influence or open washing.
Yeah.
Right? There is,
Cisco wants to come along and put Opflex into Open Daylight and contributes the code and then has members on the steering committee, it gets into Open Daylight, whether it's a good idea or not. That's what I sort of saw. That's not to say that Opflex is a bad idea necessarily, but there didn't seem to be a lot of discussion around whether we wanted a policy framework in ODL.
Well, so I think part of that has to do with where the project is at. Right now, almost all the projects that go into Open Daylight are incubation projects.
Mm.
There's a very low bar to rejecting anything, and that's because it's an early project.
Code is coin of the realm.
At some point, it will mature, right? And somebody will have to stand up and say, "Hey, I've already got one of these, and I don't want an overlapping project." And that'll happen over time, right?
Yeah.
I think the governance is in place.
You're talking about the process of, I have an idea, something I'd like to be a part of ODL.
Yeah.
The ODL, the Technical Steering
permissive.
Committee
decides
that, yes, this is a project that should be part of ODL
and
or not.
And I don't think they've said no to anything yet because, they haven't had any grounds to.
Yeah.
Right? To be perfectly fair to them. Right?
Well, OpenStack is now starting to talk about DefStack. So they're now saying there's so many projects.
DefCore, you mean?
Yeah, DefCore, yeah.
Yeah.
There's so many that you can now hardly define what OpenStack is. So now they're actually saying there is a default core that was what that anything that you want to call OpenStack must have these things in it.
Mm-hmm.
And these
as far
are
as the modules, specific,
Yes. So now they're starting to force some conformance. But, OpenStack's a lot further down the pipe, down the sewage pipe, if you like, than ODL is.
Hey, we're big fans of OpenStack here.
Yeah.
Helium.
Exactly. Helium.
Not Hellion, sure. Because I'm confused now.
Yeah. But, OpenStack's moving further down that pipeline and effectively is implementing what you're saying.
You bring up a really good point, right? Which is, 5 years in and dozens of projects later, OpenStack is realizing, we've had some good success here, right? Good proliferation of projects, thousands of developers.
Mm-hmm.
But what does it really mean
for
something to be OpenStack? And, they care from, a couple of angles, right? They care from a sort of a trademark logo usage perspective. They care from sort of, a technical perspective, right?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of interoperability, right?
Yeah.
If I have an OpenStack distro that uses, Trove and OOO and another OpenStack distro doesn't, right? What does that mean in terms of interoperability, in terms of customers being able to switch workloads, right?
If you've got a vendor who doesn't ship Swift or Neutron, you're going to be in deep trouble. If there's a distro, with no networking and it's still called OpenStack, you're going to be a little unhappy.
Yeah. So I think, open source is definitely not it's not the answer to all of the timing, development, culture, political issues that we see elsewhere, right? But I do think that it is becoming a far more important part of the way even we as vendors are starting to think about building and forming ecosystems. And it's because at the end of the day, it's customer driven. Customers are now saying we want open solutions, and a lot of these customers.
Well, imagine imagine for a minute, if you will, if there was Hellion being developed by HP, Cisco's InterCloud OpenStack version. Now imagine if those were two different products internally developed by your companies after years of internal development, and then all of a sudden there's a startup producing the same product. We would now have, we've got a proprietary vCloud from VMware Corporation. We'd have the proprietary Cisco, we'd have the proprietary HTTP, we'd have the proprietary IBM, and customers would be ultimately balkanized into a single cloud platform.
Yeah.
Imagine what that would look like. You would be literally, the decision you would have to bet to buy one of those platforms because there's no exit.
It would look like networking for the last 20 years.
Well, actually, it'd look more like Oracle.
Yeah, sure.
I think, it'd be that level of decision. This is the one, I have to make a choice of which private cloud standard I'm going to choose for the next 20 years.
Yeah.
Because once you move into that, you're never going to leave because
there's
no sideways portability into and out of.
Yeah.
But by reducing why vendors are coordinating around OpenStack and Open Daylight for the same reason, right, same pies, is that customers can get in and know they can go sideways, they can go left. You could start off with the HP van controller, which will eventually become daylight compatible over time, I think. And you're making huge contributions. HP is making huge contributions to Open Daylight. But you could go left and say, well, I want Brocade's controller today. Or I can go right and get Cisco's Open Daylight controller. And I'm not locked in, so I don't have this fear. So I don't have to waste, you know, stop buying. I can make a purchasing decision without having options removed off the table.
Right.
Now, that's cooperation. That's not competition, right? You don't want competition in this situation. You actually want cooperation.
Well, so you want cooperation to the extent that it guarantees interoperability and interchangeability.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the end of the day, hopefully customers are buying HP solutions or competitor solutions based on, you know,
competitive advantage.
Yeah, some advantage that it gives them, right? Some feature, some, you know.
How do we get to a point? How do we resolve this? I mean, we've been here for 35 minutes, Ricky just told me, mostly bitching about openness and the problem and the conflation of the terms with what it really means and so on. Mm-hmm. Is there a way forward between the standards bodies and the open source movement? You know, do you have a solution in mind?
I have a suggestion. I think you know vendors like ourselves, you know, some of the other large vendors who participate actively in these code producing bodies as well as these standard producing bodies, we really ought to make sure that the representatives in these things, in both these bodies, aren't off on two different islands, right?
Yeah.
That we're really sort of, you know, one supporting the other, one in parallel to the other, because, you know, we're finding, you know, these open source communities are a great playground, right? To be able to test your ideas, right?
Yep.
To be able to test a reference implementation, you know, and it's more than just a trial balloon. It's really being able to put it in front of some of the, you know, the brain trust, I call it, right?
Yep.
The brain trust of the community, right? There are very, very, very smart people.
If you can
get
a wide variation of opinions and perspectives on an idea,
and
if the idea still floats, then you know, maybe you can't flush it.
Yeah, and I think the other part of openness is really, you know, there's a lot of open stuff out there available for anyone to leverage, right? So you can bring it in-house and do whatever you want with it. And I would say that the folks who are likely to be most successful are the ones who are sharing the goodness.
Yes.
Right? So upstream what you can, what you are able to, right?
Yep.
To the greatest extent possible.
Yep.
And I think, you know, that becomes, that's a win-win for the customer as well as for the vendor.
So let's touch very quickly on open washing. When you said earlier we want to talk about open washing, do you want to try and have a go at defining open washing?
Yeah.
Or just expanding on that a little bit. So the idea is that listeners should be able to sit there and recognize what open washing is and to start, you know, getting that smell.
Yeah.
You know, recognizing that smell as, that is...
Well, so I would say, I would say, you know, the question to ask when anyone proposes to you that they have an open solution is, okay, well, is it based on a standard? If so, you know, is it a standard that was agreed to by multiple parties, and are other people implementing it?
Was it cooperatively agreed?
Yeah.
Not here's my standard, you can use it if you wish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not a standard.
That's a wiki entry on the RFC, on the ITF.
So, you know, I'd say the, you know, one real test is whether or not there's more than one party contributing, you know, contributed to the standard. The other one, you know, you hear this a lot, there's, you know, open this and open that in terms of, you know, open source projects. And, you know, some are run better than others, but simply taking a product and registering a .org in its name and adding open to the front, right?
Mm-hmm.
And pushing out the source code. If you're a community of one, you're not really a community, right?
You can't have consensus by yourself.
Exactly. And, you know, I think some of them are earnest efforts to try and build communities that don't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That happens, right? A lot of open source projects land with a thud, right?
Yeah.
And that's not a critique of the technology, it's not
some
a critique
of
the vendor.
Some of them are a marketing strategy, right?
Yeah.
So if you can get open and you can build it, have a go at building a community and attracting people to that, then you can build marketing momentum around that and customer engagement that pulls through to a commercial. Look at Docker, right?
Yeah.
or Linux. You know, the core of Linux remains free, but Red Hat has built a business model on insurance of Linux.
Sure.
And Docker's going to do the same thing with the Docker code, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, there are business models around open that don't preclude throwing it out there. But, as you say, it needs to be consensus-driven still.
Yeah. And I'd also caution against, folks who claim openness based on the virtue of, the source code being available.
Yeah.
That's important to a certain class of customers. Most customers have no use for the source code, right? If you're a large telco, a certain class of enterprise hyperscale provider, yes, right? It makes a lot of sense. But for most people, simply pointing them to a GitHub repo and saying, look, it's open.
Yeah, how can I leverage that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't need vendor code in escrow, right? GitHub doesn't do anything for me. So I think, those are some of the things to watch out for. Certainly, you see open being, it really has turned into, this big marketing buzzword, right?
Yeah.
Everything is open this, open that. Mm. I mean, open APIs is almost redundant, like you said, right? But, we use it anyway, right?
Yeah, we do, yeah. Microsoft Word has a published API for .docx.
Oh, wow. We should rebrand to Open Packet Pushers. There'd be something there, maybe.
That'd be awesome.
Could be.
Well, that would cause us Adam Awesome.
There's Adidal. Two of us. That could be consensus.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
Yeah.
And we could put a .org out.
Yeah.
And then our free content on the packetpushers.org web.
But you want to build a community, and you want to charge $500,000 for platinum members a year, right?
I like that idea too.
Oh yeah, I like that. And we could go to Hawaii.
Is 500 enough?
I often joke. You look at the proliferation of open source projects, and not to say that they're unnecessary, but so many of them, so many big ones have come along in the last couple of years. I mean, the latest one was OPNFV, which again, we're founding members.
Yes.
And it's really OPNFV is sort of the right now, I'm viewing it as the felicitous union of OpenStack and Open Daylight. There will be more stuff there, right?
I think some of these bodies will collapse. Not collapse, but they'll be folded into something else. They'll establish something, get their own code trains running, get consensus. It's a niche. OpenFE is really... Anyway, it's another day.
I often joke, my dream is no longer to go get a startup funded. It's to go build my own open source foundation, right?
Yeah.
Because it's,
How about one like Etsy? That's a tidy revenue earner there.
So,
All right. I think, thanks. So a couple of things, right, in the wrap-up. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at open products, open something, whatever it is, if you wanted to have an open washing test, you want to make sure there's more than one contributor to the project. So if it's just one company ditching their code into a .org, as you say, maybe not. So check out the actual organization behind it and check if it's multi-vendor, at least. And it should also be multi-customer. There should be customers putting resources into the project to tell you that it's got a vibrancy and it's not going to wither on the vine when vendor A decides to cut the budget and cut the headcount associated with the open bit, and then it won't be very open at all. Open means more than one participant, so open customers, open org. Source code isn't everything. It's probably nothing to most people.
Depending on who you are, yeah.
Yeah, because I'm not about to check out source code and start running that as my core networking. Having source code there means that many people can contribute and have eyes, and that's important, but that's what it's important for. And many parties engaged across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But what I also hope is that vendors, as you said, the thing that I've said in previous shows is vendors need to take control of their people on the standards bodies and keep them focused on the prize, which is cooperation, not competition. When you're inside the open standards body, you need to be cooperating, not competing. You compete outside of the open standards bodies, you cooperate inside of them. And CEOs of the big companies need to be making that happen. Sarwar, thanks for coming on today. Tell people where they can find you.
I'm Raza Sarwar on Twitter.
Perfect.
Very good.
And Mr. Banks?
And I'm at EC Banks on Twitter, ecbanks.com. And you are?
Greg Farrow. You can find me on theetherealmind.com. But if you would like to know more about today's show, you can send email to packetpushers@gmail.com. Or if you want to, head on over to the blog post and leave some loving comments to tell us how joyous you were to be stimulated by this vibratory discussion that lit up your open world.
I think that was dirty, whatever you just said. Anyway.
But it was lush. And you can also, don't forget to follow us on Packet Pushers on Twitter as @PacketPushers. And as always, remember that too much networking would never be enough.